Jim Allister, name me one thing within this document which unionists should fear.
Quite a lot, Stephen. First of all, this document agrees the substance. It may be still equivocal in the form, but agrees the substance of Irish language legislation. And that substance is built around Irish becoming an official language of Northern Ireland. And the document then says that the legislation will provide that recognition of Irish as an official language by making provision for an enforcer, an Irish language commissioner, and for public authorities then to be required to implement the standards that he sets.
You're missing out the bit where it says nothing in the legislation will affect the status of the English language.
Oh, yes, it says that, but indeed, English technically is not an official language in Northern Ireland.
Actually, Jim is wrong. Jim is a lawyer. He's actually misquoting the document, Stephen, here. This is a very important distinction.
Well, sorry. Is this Sinn Féin's little helper again?
Oh,
here we go, Jim.
Let's focus on the facts rather than the abuse.
They did it on the flag. Now they're willing to do it on the language.
Let's focus on the reality of the words.
Okay, hold on, Stephen. Let's hear what Jim says, and then, of course, you can respond, Stephen.
Yeah. Well, let's be very clear. The infrastructure of this is emphatic. You will have Irish as an official language. You will have a commissioner to enforce it. He will set standards for every public body for the use and delivery of their services through Irish where that is required. And he will review those standards, no doubt, in an upward trajectory every 5 years.
What would that mean in real life? What do you think that would mean in real life?
I think that would mean, in real life, quite apart from the total waste of money, it would mean a trilingual assembly where, though everyone can speak English, they will be required to have translation services into Irish and Ulster Scots. It will mean the same, ultimately, in our councils. It will mean visibility in our councils for those languages. It will mean that every public body in the delivery of services must be willing and able to deliver them in Irish. It will mean that those who use public services must be able to use them in Irish, and all of that will be set forth by standards established by the enforcer, who will be some zealot for the Irish language.
What is there to fear?
And then he will have an implementation plan to which we will hold every public body to account.
Why would you lose sleep over any of that?
I would lose sleep over all of that because it will transform, as part of the Republican agenda, the face of Northern Ireland. Remember what was in An Phoblacht just 10 years ago when their culture spokesman said that for us, the Irish language is part of the Republican agenda.
Well, you're going back 10 years, Jim. Some people want to look forward to the next 10 years rather than going back 10 years.
The next 10 years under this agreement would be into the second phase of a zealot and enforcer for the Irish language, putting it upon every public body the standards that they must meet. And let's not forget, in Wales we've had this experience. The language commissioner in Wales just recently issued 46 pages of instructions to public bodies, 176 points that they had to meet in their provision of Welsh. We've got the same architecture here for an Irish language commissioner who will be doing the same thing on an aggressive agenda where every 5 years he can up the ante even more.
And yet you have heard the DUP.
They haven't agreed to Irish language.
Well, they clearly haven't agreed to it because no deal was done.
They have agreed the substance. And my goodness, we heard Edwin Poots last night saying that he was the author of some of this. I wonder, did Gregory Campbell choke on his yogurt when he heard that the agreement he was denying was in form, in fact, had been part authored by one of the DUP negotiators.
There was no agreement. An agreement isn't an agreement until everything is agreed.
Of course, that's the mantra. But when you see 13 pages down in black and white, never mind the text of the bill, which we haven't been allowed to see, when you see down 13 pages, the black and white of detail, the substance of the commitment, it's clear the substance of the Anglo-Irish, of the Irish Language Act is agreed. The only thing that remains is the form. Is it going to be a trilogy or is it going to be a trinity? That's the question that is yet to be settled. But the substance is there.
You know the
substance that was rejected heretofore.
You know how the Democratic Unionist Party works, Jim. You were in there at one stage. Why? Well, do you think they did bring their base with them? What do you think their calculation was as they were drafting this draft as to how they were going to sell this within their rank and file?
I think they absolutely didn't bring their base with them, and I think that they paid the price for that. I think the negotiators in their little cocoon of negotiations got way ahead of their base. How would they have sold it? They would have dressed it up with the pretense that they're delivering something we never needed, an Ulster Scots Act. My goodness, it's the last thing we need to waste money on an Ulster Scots Act, and here it is in this legislation. They would have dressed it up that we have obtained that, we have got something on culture, but the fundamental is they had surrendered. They had climbed down to Sinn Féin's primary demand of Irish language as an official language with official status in Northern Ireland.
Why is everything in your world...
With all the imprimatur and enforcement to go with it.
Why is everything in your world about surrender rather than compromise, rather than mature adults trying to find a way forward so that this country can be governed by local people? You know, why use this language of surrender?
Because that's what it is. And, of course, we have to recognise how we got here. We got here because Sinn Féin held the DUP to ransom, put the gun to their head and said, if you want back into government, if you want your chauffeur-driven cars again, here's the price. And the DUP was preparing to pay the price. And, of course, having paid the price on this, Sinn Féin, in their terms, having put manners on the DUP, next time they want another up the ante on something else, be it more intense Irish language or something else, they just repeat the formula. It's worked perfectly for them. I'm glad that the DUP base and the wider grassroots unionist community pulled them up short on this. But I think there needs to be continuing vigilance and an avoidance of getting conditioned to this. An Irish Language Act is not necessary, would change the face of Northern Ireland, and is part of the Republican agenda. And no doubt there will be people like Stephen Farrey, useful little helpers to Sinn Féin to help them sell it, as they did on the tearing down at the time.
Well, I promise we'd let you respond, Stephen Farrey.
Well, first of all, I'm no fellow traveller with Sinn Féin. I'm someone who believes in a shared Northern Ireland and recognise that we have to build something that everyone from all identities can buy into. But Jim, as a lawyer, should know the importance of being very precise with words. Whenever he talks about Irish being an official language of Northern Ireland, he's plain wrong. The document says official recognition of the status of the Irish language in Northern Ireland. That's
What's
a fundamentally
that?
Different concept than what we see, by contrast, in the Republic of Ireland, where Irish is recognised as the first language of the country in the Constitution. And people are getting that type of concept in their heads. That is not what this document is
building
up to see in Northern Ireland.
What would the official status be?
What we're doing is recognising the historical importance of Irish language to the shared culture and heritage of Northern Ireland.
Well, it's more than recognising, isn't it, Stephen? If it was just recognising, then it wouldn't be down here as...
It's words on paper, Stephen, that are there to give a degree of political and cultural recognition to something that's of key importance to a large section of our community. And it's not about transforming Northern Ireland into some sort of...
No, it's more than that, Stephen, because it's within the paragraph under the Irish Respecting Languages and Diversity Bill. Would listen to this. The legislation will provide that recognition by making... I'll read the whole paragraph. Official recognition of the status of the Irish language in Northern Ireland, in addition to that provided by existing statutory provisions relating to Irish medium education. The legislation will provide that recognition by making provision for an Irish language commissioner and for public authorities to implement best practice standards.
Hold on a minute, Stephen.
Public authorities would be required to implement best practice standards.
Yes.
Who decides what the best practice standards are? The commissioner. That leaves it open to, just say the commissioner does say, okay, best practice standard is that every street sign should be bilingual.
Right, let me address those two things in turn. First of all, if we were going down Jim's version of Irish being an official language of Northern Ireland. This document would say, henceforth, Irish will be an official language of Northern Ireland. That's not what the document says. So it means something entirely different. Language is important, and we have to be very precise about these things, particularly in something that's so sensitive as the controversy around language issues. Secondly, this is not in line with the powers of the Welsh Commissioner. This is not the enforcement powers of a High Court judge that people were talking about last
these
week.
Are ruling
this is about
power.
A situation where a commissioner works with public bodies in a manner, in a cooperative manner, to ensure that the scheme they have in place is appropriate to the user base of that public service.
They're
for example, something like Rivers Agency, we are dealing with inanimate objects like water and rivers, probably needs a fairly
And what if the commissioner decides that it's not enough?
Tourism would need a much more
outward facing approach. So Stephen, what if the commissioner decided actually that's not enough Irish language? What would happen then?
The commissioner is there not to decide. This notion that the commissioner becomes this all-powerful person who polices this is a complete and utter fallacy. It's about the government will decide, government departments will decide, but they work in partnership with the commissioner to ensure that they have the best practice in terms of what they're doing and the policies that they're pursuing. For example, you have a central hub for Irish language services. Not every department, not every public body is going to have Irish language specialists. That's an indication this is actually going to be a fairly light touch intervention, because if it was otherwise, every single public agency would have their own Irish language specialists.
Right. Final word, Jim, from you, then we're moving on.
I think it's fairly clear that it is a rolling process. The standards are to be reviewed every 5 years by the commissioner, who's the enforcer, and then the implementation plans of every public body will be a upgraded in that regard. It's quite clear that it's a rolling process of all pervasive official status for Irish.
OK, Jim Allister, Stephen Farry, thank you.